Hello, Martin from the future here. I just wanted to let you know that we are spoiling Star Wars, The End of the Sixth Sense, and the Ultimate Spider-Man comics, as well as Tex Returns. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Niamh.
Hi, I'm Martin.
And we're Asteroids in Exile. So what are we doing here, Martin?
We're recording a podcast.
Why though?
Why? Well, you're from a unique cultural background with growing up in Australia and discovering the wonders of the world in the time that you have spent on this planet so far. And I'm from Austria. I'm stuck behind the Alps.
Stuck behind the Alps. I like that.
Yeah, well, I'm not Hannibal. I can't cross them.
Right. So, yeah. I think the key thing is, you know, we're two geeks and we wanted to pretty much jump on the bandwagon before we hit peak superhero this year. So we've got, what, how many movies coming out? Like a load?
A lot.
A lot of movies. And we've been having a lot of movies building up for the last couple of years, but this year is going to be the big one with Batman v Superman. And we really wanted to sort of just get our thoughts down, sort of take stock of where we're at with superheroes in the culture. And you know, get all that done before it's all over, because it's probably all going to be over by the end of this year, right?
Yeah, we haven't even seen anything of the two-part Avengers 3 movie yet.
Yet, yeah. So by the time that comes out, you know, what's it going to look like? So we've already seen sort of box office decline as these movies are coming out. So the key thing is we wanted to get through this year, which is probably going to be a big year. So we got a whole heap of movies coming out. Plus, we also wanted to discuss comics. Graphic novels, TV shows, anything else that's geek related. So, where are we going to start?
Yeah, let's start with the movies we're looking forward to.
Yeah.
Or there was this this little movie that came out last year, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens, that almost killed Avatar box office wise.
Almost, but didn't quite. Didn't quite. First of all, are you happy about that? Are you happy that Star Wars didn't kill Avatar? Or did you want it to?
As a lifelong Star Wars fan, I wanted it to slaughter Avatar.
Yeah.
As a human being, I don't really care. It did well. Enough of people earned a lot of money, probably the wrong people, and that's fine with me.
So, but yeah, I mean, as a James Cameron fan and as an Avatar, I'm not so much an Avatar fan, but I like the fact that James Cameron has, it's like, I don't know, 3 movies in the top 10. It's ridiculous, but it's cool. So I was interested to see whether Star Wars could actually topple that on the box office, but just didn't manage to.
No, and it will be interesting once Avatar 2 hits cinemas, if it can replicate the success of its predecessor.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about the first one was that it was just the technology aspect of it, which is what made everyone just go watch it multiple times, right?
Yes, we haven't seen anything quite like it.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Like, just in terms of the 3D, it was just a great execution. The thing is, though, is Avatar 2 going to bring another technological, you know, advance to movies? Because if it doesn't, then it probably won't have the same sort of mix of repeated viewings and things like that. Because overall, like, the Avatar story was pretty simple.
Yes. And I think James Cameron is aware of that fact.
Yeah. So hopefully he's got another ace up his sleeve, like technologically. And that's kind of why I like James Cameron movies, is, you know, technically, I think they're really good.
Yes, yes. But I hope that he brings a bit more story to the second part, because there are a lot of things that he could have done better in the first movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, well, like, have a story.
Yeah.
Have an actual different story. Yeah. So we'll see with Star Wars. What do you think of Star Wars overall, though?
I think it's great that it's back. It's even with all of the flaws that are in the movie, but kind of get redacted by the supplemental material that comes out. It's still a great movie, and I think it's also, how should I put it? It's the birth of a new paradigm. Of new movies, you know,
yeah.
You have no white male lead, and that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's cool. From just mixing it up and bringing it into a new generation, it was good. I think it's a little bit sad that there's no actual overarching story. But if you look at the previous overarching stories, I mean, they were They were great, but in the grand scheme of things, now that Episode 7 has come out, they didn't really add up to anything, did they? Because the Rebels kind of, everything they achieved, everything's still the same. So,
yeah, and everything they built got destroyed in like a two-minute sequence.
Yeah, so it's almost like a retcon or just like a reboot, you know? Like, we just, don't worry about them. Here's where the real story starts. But the sad
Republic
part
is me, dead.
Yeah, the sad part for me is that the story's not going to end now because Disney is just going to keep this thing going forever and ever.
Yes.
So there's really no end to the story. It's just going to snowflake out into all these different directions.
But yeah, with the Legacy movies, I don't know how they are called, Rogue One or A Star Wars Story with those movies,
yeah.
we can at least get different flavors from the same universe. Like spy movies or adventure movies, you could do an Indiana Jones like thing in one of those.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, effectively, what they've got now is the Star Wars universe, right? So it's all about telling stories inside that universe. The universe itself is the attraction, not so much knowing the overarching story of the Skywalker family or something like that.
Yes,
I think that may still be some sort of structure that they sort of tie everything back to. But like you said, you know, they're just going to take it in multiple directions and have different genres and stuff like that, which would be interesting. And the universe is cool. You know, it's cool. It's a cool place to spend some time. It's a nice holiday to have.
Yeah, it depends on the planet. I don't want to spend my holiday on Tatooine or Jakku.
Or Hoth.
Or Coruscant, for that matter.
Yeah, Coruscant would be like, I don't know.
Or not in the lower levels, at least.
Cities can't, you know, if you've got a whole city that's a planet, it should be kind of dry, maybe. Cool. That was Star Wars. I'm excited, though, for the next set of movies. So we'll see. I think J.J. Abrams did a good job to just ask more questions and answer.
Yes, he did a solid job. It's not there's nothing extraordinary about it, but it's a solid movie.
It wasn't brilliant, but it was satisfying. The whole thing was a spring pad for what comes next.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we got to wait some time for that.
Yeah, and they pushed it back to December 2017 from the May release date.
Did they?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, there you go.
First, they thought about making Star Wars a Christmas franchise or a December release in every year. And I guess with all the changes, the public demands now of those movies, they pushed it back to December.
Right. Okay. I didn't know that because I was still expecting them to change to a May time frame, but December makes more sense. I mean, well, it's better. So one of the things I think, you know, my group from university, we get together every Christmas because these movies generally come out around Christmas in Australia. So we have Boxing Day, which is December 26th after Christmas. And we normally get together on December 26th and we watch something. So if Star Wars is going to come out on that sort of schedule, that would be cool. So
it would be nice.
That's our movies for the next couple of years locked in.
For the rest of your life.
Well, if they manage to do one a year, yeah. Yeah, we went to watch Star Wars last year. Actually, I didn't join last year, but they went and I met them. So cool. And so what comes out before then? So we've got a whole, like, this year's movies coming up, right?
Yeah, well, this year we have the big two punching it out.
Ooh, the big two. Batman v Superman.
Yeah.
And Captain America. So it's like a tag team, isn't it?
Tag the big three, yeah. But, you know, Iron Man didn't make it in the title.
Well,
of Civil War.
Probably going to be 80% of the movie anyway, I think.
Yeah.
So the advertising. So you know that Robert Downey Jr. kind of muscled his way back in and said, nah, I got to take over this movie.
I'm not done yet.
Yeah. So what's your expectations for Batman v Superman?
I don't know. I'm not really sure what to expect of this movie. I don't expect much of the Man of Steel. I expect an interesting performance by Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. Is it Jesse Eisenberg?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg.
I'm not sure what to think of him. But then I'm kind of fed up with the whole DC universe as it is at the moment.
Which part of the DC universe, though? Like the New 52? Like, are you talking the comics or the movies?
The comics and the TV shows. I don't think that DC has a plan. They're just they're trying to grab a lifeline, so to say.
Yeah, they're just all over the place. It feels like.
But I haven't seen Legends of Tomorrow yet, or any of any episode of Supergirl, which I heard is a very good show.
Yeah, I watched the early episodes of Supergirl, but it kind of got a bit boring for me, and I stopped. But apparently, it's got a lot better, so I will give it another go. And the
yeah,
Flash,
did, I'm sorry?
Yeah, The Flash is going to turn up on...
Oh, yes, they are having a crossover.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. Yeah, so just in terms of the fractured universe, there's just so much DC out there. There's the comics, there's the TV shows. So I watch Arrow and Flash, and I've watched, I think, the first couple episodes of Legends of Tomorrow, which was all right. And then the movie versions are going to be completely different again. So it's like, how many versions of these characters do we need, you know?
Yeah. And they even moved the DC offices to Burbank, I think. So they can produce everything in-house, and they're still not able to do a unified version of the moving characters, so to say.
The moving characters? You mean like the live action, right?
The live action, I'm sorry. Yeah, the live action characters. And that's a bit disappointing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's like... Warner Brothers is kind of like every department has its own head, and so they're all trying to just make their department's stuff, right? And they're not really talking to each other. That's why they don't have like a Feige at the top, sort of orchestrating this whole thing.
But that could be a good thing, you know. You could use that to your advantage to not have a Kevin Feige head figure. That
it should be more innovative. I mean, you've got all these different pockets of things, but the problem is, I think, you know, some of them should become better than others and take over, whereas mm-hmm. they're all just coexisting separately in different universes and different worlds. It's just watering down the overall thing. So, I mean, it's good. It gives us variety because you've got, you know, stuff, you know, everything from Teen Titans to the Flash and Arrow, which I think are fun, to the Batman v Superman and Man of Steel stuff, which is very dark. So you at least different shades, whereas Marvel's only starting to do that now, I think, you know, with what they've got in the cinematic universe versus what's on Netflix. And they've got the animated stuff as well, which doesn't tie in, right? It's not part of the movie canon.
The animated stuff is not part of the movie canon, but that's what DC could use to their advantage, the multiple Earth. The multiverse they've set up, because we can see a more a dark version of Batman and Superman in the movie, but yeah. We could also get a live action version that is a bit more lighthearted, you know, back to the roots. Make Batman has to be grim to work to a certain degree, but he's such a stretchable character that they can bring in some more wacky concepts. The same with Superman, you know, make him the Man of Tomorrow again, and not focus on him being the Man of Steel.
Do you think that's their overall plan?
I hope so.
That DC's building this massive multiverse, right?
I hope so. They're doing. I haven't watched season 2 of The Flash yet, but they bring in Jay Garrick from Earth 2.
Yeah.
Which is this Art Deco Earth, from what I heard.
So, spoiler alert.
season 2 is already running. I'm not sure if I'm spoiling anything.
You may not have watched it yet. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Like, that's the thing with spoilers now. It's like, people put spoiler alerts that are only rumors. It's like, if it's a rumor and it's not actually substantiated, then is it a spoiler? But people put spoiler alerts out for that. That's crazy.
It's very considerate of them.
Well, the thing is, if you don't want to even hear rumors, what the hell are you doing listening to a podcast or reading an article about it? You know, it's like, if you don't want to know, just don't read it.
Just don't read it, yeah. I've got immune to this. I've read a leaked script of episode 7 2 weeks before the movie was released, because I don't care anymore.
Yeah. It's like, I don't care. It's like, yeah, I'm just going to read the whole thing. It's like,
yeah,
what?
Yeah, just fuck it. Oh, I'm sorry, I cursed.
You can curse. We'll have to put a language warning as well as a spoiler warning at the start.
I'm really trying to not curse from now on.
Okay, let's see how you go with that.
Usually it won't work. No. I'll try and keep it together. So yeah, sorry for spoiling things about The Flash.
No, it's fine. I mean, look, I think he's been in the advertising anyway, so it's fine. And I don't care. Like, I think we need to sort of establish what's going to be a spoiler. I think it's only a legitimate spoiler if, like, for one, it happens for sure in the movie, right? Okay, so let's use The Sixth Sense as an example, right?
Yes.
You know the movie with I See Dead People, that one?
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, but Bruce Willis is dead through the whole movie, right? So he's a ghost. I think telling people that, if they haven't seen the movie, that's a spoiler. But talking about what may or may not happen in a movie that's coming out in 2017 is not a spoiler.
No, that's not a spoiler. Definitely not.
We don't know, you know? So I think that's going to be the thing. Like, for example, there are spoilers in episode 7, right? With what happens to certain characters on a bridge. So that's a spoiler because it actually happened. And if you haven't seen the movie, you don't want to know, right? Or potentially you may not want to know. But you know, if we're talking about what's going to happen in Rogue One or, you know, whether Doctor Strange is going to have a green cape, I don't think that's a spoiler.
No, that's not a spoiler. That's just, you're going to see it anyway.
Yeah. Well, you're going to see it anyway. And we don't know whether it's going to be true or not. So it can't be. So anyway, I think that's the thing. So the thing with Jay Garrick, I think, yeah, I mean, for sure. And the other thing is, if it's already been in the advertising, like at this point, we know that Doomsday is going to be in Superman, in Batman v Superman. So not so much a spoiler because they freaking told us.
Yes. Did they confirm that it's Doomsday?
I mean, it looks like Doomsday and it seems like Doomsday.
Yeah, my theory is that they could bring in Bizarro because in the trailer he has Zod on an operating table, perhaps try to clone him and make him a version of, you know, combine Superman's DNA with General Zod's DNA.
Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. But Bizarro's actual human, he's like a bizarre, he's like a backwards version of Superman, isn't he? Like he's actually got the backwards Superman shield on his chest and stuff like that.
Yeah, but isn't it canon now that Bizarro is a failed attempt to clone Superman?
Is it? Oh, right.
I'm not sure.
I thought he came from an alternate world, but I don't really know all that much about Bizarro or Superman.
I think it's canon though. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, canon nerds.
Canon nerds, let us know.
Yeah, let us know. Write us an email.
We need a Twitter account or something for this that people can talk to.
Don't worry, I'll set everything up.
Yeah. So just in terms of this whole podcast operation, Martin really is the brains and the technical genius behind making all of this work.
Oh, thank you. The technical genius.
Yeah, I just show up and talk. I'd be late because I ran out of coffee today. It's very tough to get through this.
And the problem is, even if I send you coffee, it won't reach you until Friday next week.
Yeah.
It's not like I can bring something over.
Off to Chicago. How long does that take? I don't know. Well, don't use USPS because that's super slow. And it probably won't ever get here because they're terrible. Anyway, random side rant. I guess you wouldn't be using USPS because you'll be mailing stuff from Austria anyway. So
it will reach USPS at some point. I think our post carrier works together with USPS.
Well, that's the problem right there because apparently the USPS depot in Chicago, like the distribution center, is just glorious. And I've had stuff mailed to me where it's just been stuck there for like 3 or 4 days and there's no update on the tracking information. And it's just like, what's going on?
Yeah, it's the same here with customs.
Really?
Yeah, things get stuck for 2 weeks.
No, that's crazy. Customs. Can't I just get my stuff faster? You know, is that too much to ask?
And then you have to rock up at the customs office and they're asking you, why did you order this from Japan, for example? Because you can't get it here? Did you check hard enough if you could get it here?
You actually have to go and talk to them? Like you have to go and see, you have to talk to people? What?
I was interviewed once. I had to go to the customs offices and get a parcel there. And I was asked why I did order stuff from America and not get it in Austria. And I don't know if that question was asked in the person's function as an customs officer or if he was just curious as a human being.
Oh, seriously? What, did they summon you or did you just have to go like...
No, they summoned me. I got a letter. I had to show ID to get the letter. Then I rocked up there. I had to wait for half an hour in a waiting area with other people. And I had to get a number.
Were you ordering like a massive amount of stuff? Or was
No, I just ordered. It was a Masterpiece Soundwave, the US release, which is quite a big box. But I've ordered bigger and more expensive stuff already.
So maybe they was looking at your... looking at your records and see that this guy has a lot of stuff coming in from overseas.
The guy at the post office I used to know before he stopped working there said, there's a big folder with my name on it with customs declarations and stuff.
Oh my God. Big brother is watching.
It's watching you, yeah.
Oh, it's crazy. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You just, you know, if you don't have it in Austria, what are you going to do? And you're doing it legally anyway. It's not like you're breaking the law or anything.
No. Everything is bought legally. Or I get a middleman to get it for me. There's a customs sheet for everything. Yeah.
I think so.
It's not like anybody is smuggling things for me.
Yeah, not like that.
No.
All right, so random.
Yeah, Batman versus Superman.
I still haven't worked out what the customs deal and stuff is in America to be able to mail stuff in here. I know that you will have to pay tax on things. Like, it was brilliant being in Australia because you've got, like, you only need to worry about being taxed on stuff that you're bringing in if it's more than $1,000 Australian, whereas 1,000 US, I'm not sure. But anyway, as long as it's under $1,000, you can have it imported into the country. Whereas here, I don't know. I think they pretty much look at tax for everything, and you can get hit with having to pay tax.
Yeah, it's the same here. I'm really worried because I pre-ordered the Iron Giant figure from Mondo Figures two years ago or a year ago. And I forgot that I pre-ordered it. It ran me about $300.
Right.
And now I got the notification that they will probably ship it this year in March. And I'm sweating the customs declaration for this thing.
Wow.
I hope that somebody at Mondo, I can't say it on the podcast, it will be broadcasted. don't write the real sum. I paid for it on the package, please.
Secret. Just make it cheaper than it was, you know?
Yeah, you know, take $100 off it.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, that's the thing. You can't cheat death in taxes, right? It's tax season here in the US.
Yeah, you can probably cheat death easier than taxes.
Yeah, probably. That's right. The IRS will come after you in America. You should hear some of the radio commercials they have for tax season, and it sounds like there are SWAT teams of like tax accountants coming out of the IRS, and they're gonna like break through your window and like, you know, abseil into your house.
Well, we have kind of tax SWAT teams here in Austria that go to building sites and check if everybody's registered for, and they have like the FBI jackets, the blue jackets, but on the back is tax officers for checking if all your builders are legit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's like working for safety, or is it like actual like immigration or safety or like everything?
It's everything combined together, because you have to pay taxes for the people you employ, and especially in the builder line of work, the black market is a very viable and often employed resource.
Right. So when you say pay taxes for the people, that's about paying their like...
the wages.
Yeah, making sure they've got a wage and making sure you're collecting superannuation and stuff like that, like all of that related stuff. I see. Okay.
And it's in Austria, we automatically pay our taxes with every paycheck that a company writes for us. You don't have to do, you just have to...
You don't have to file a tax return at the end of the year.
No, you don't. Yeah, you'll file it at the end of the year, but you're getting a few bucks back.
Right. Okay. Okay. In America as well.
Oh, it's the same? Oh, I thought you have to pay taxes once a year for what you earned this year.
No, so they do collect tax throughout the year with your normal paycheck. Apparently, the way the system works, they kind of over-collect through the year. So normally when you file your tax return, you get some back. So that's the incentive to make sure.
Oh, then the systems are similar.
Yeah.
We have debunked a myth that I've been believing in for the last few years.
I've only been living in America for 2 months, so I may be wrong, but that's my understanding. So if there's any tax accountants out there, let me know.
Yeah, let us know.
So interesting, this podcast just went into tax for like, I don't know, 5 minutes.
Yeah. Batman versus Superman. What are you expecting?
I don't know, like, it's weird. I'm excited for it. I'm really looking forward to seeing Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne.
Yes.
I think he looks really cool in the trailers. You know, it really comes across as a very different Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Yeah, the Nolan Bruce Wayne was cool and all, but he was very much, you know, very dark and brooding, you know. But I think the Ben Affleck one feels a bit, you know, mature. He's aged. He's like a fine wine. So I want to see how that comes across, because we've always had a Batman that's kind of in his mid-30s, right? So
yes.
I think, you know, even going back to Michael Keaton would have been around the same age. So kind of still in that phase where he's kind of like kind of young and playing the bachelor, whereas the Bruce Wayne ones would be a little bit more jaded and cynical. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes across.
Did they confirm an age for the Batman versus Superman Batman? Is he in his 40s or 50s?
I don't think they confirmed an age, but I mean, he's coming across like he's in his mid to late 40s. I mean, yeah, so it's more of a guy who's seen everything, whereas the Christian Bale Batman was still discovering a lot of things.
And then he quit?
Yeah, he kind of, had it get him down. Whereas this one feels like it's picking up after that Batman, so he's like gone through that journey of discovery and just seen how bad things can get. But he's gotten to the point where he's like, I have to fight back because who else is going to? And that's kind of like the thing about Batman that is so attractive is that, despite all of the odds and despite everything that's going on, Batman's going to be the character that keeps on fighting to the very end, and is not going to give up to his own detriment, Because if I don't do it, who else will, as Kevin Smith once said. So I'm excited for that. I think Lex Luthor is going to be interesting. I like Jesse Eisenberg, but I don't know if I like him as Lex Luthor. So I was expecting kind of more of a Mark Zuckerberg type character, someone who's a lot less. He feels just too kooky. He feels too light. And I don't know whether they're trying to do psychopath, but it's coming across as just someone who's just loopy. And that's what I'm not sure about.
I just had a thought about why I don't like him as Lex Luthor. Perhaps because he's definitely trying to chew the scenery. If that works and he's really playing an unlikable Lex Luthor, that will bring kind of a conundrum to him. Because I say as a viewer, I like him, but I know he's the antagonist in this. I shouldn't be liking him.
Yeah.
I shouldn't want him to win.
Even as the antagonist, I think it's important that you get a little bit of empathy for where he's coming from. And for me, like, he's just so awkward, which is probably, intentional. Because he's effectively to use the term geeky, but he's kind of like the geek in between the two jocks, Even the way he shows up in that trailer scene where you've got Bruce and Clark having their little discussion between them. And then he just interjects and he just feels like so out of place. He's like, how am I going to work my way into these two awesome guys? That's what it feels like. And so it's kind of cringeworthy as well, but hopefully it's coming from a place where you can connect with that.
But with I thought in the scene you were describing he comes off kind as a kind of menacing when he mentions, remind me that I shouldn't pick a fight with you.
Yeah. Do you think he knows at that point?
I'm not sure, but he came across as kind of menacing. I have the brains. You might have the muscles, but I have the brains. I have a plan in mind.
Yeah, I can see that and I want that, but I just didn't get it.
Then there's Batman, and Batman should be, or Bruce Wayne in this case, and he's supposed to be the guy who says, I have a plan for everything. I'm Batman.
Yeah, but what I liked about the way that he played it, the way, like, Bruce Wayne was so cool and collected in his takedown of Superman or of Clark, right?
Yeah.
In what he said, so like, the irony that you talking about Gotham when your newspaper writes a puff piece about your hero in Metropolis. It was like he'd obviously been, again, it comes across as a very mature way to sort of take Clark down. Because Clark obviously is much younger, right? So he's kind of in his mid-30s at that point, I would say. There is a potential 10-year age gap between them. But yeah, it's interesting, the whole don't pick a fight with this guy. But I want to see, I want more from Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. Like, he can't just be that awkward, smart guy. Because that's a stereotype of a nerd, right? Like, just smart, and I'm going to use my brains to take you down. But I think he needs to have a much darker streak, and he needs to show some backbone, because that's what I didn't see, and that's what Lex Luthor always has. Like, he's got a backbone,
Well, there are action figures of his armor, the green,
yeah,
green Iron Man suit that he wears. Perhaps we're getting a big throwdown with him that he shows the. It would be sad if the said backbone would be a physical confrontation only. because you have Batman and you have Lex Luthor. Bring in some wit. I hope they also play that you have the smartest guy in the world fighting against the world's greatest detective.
Yeah.
That would be neat.
Well, that's a fight we haven't seen before, right? I mean, just because that's bridging the two sorts of worlds, the Batman world and the Superman world. So Lex versus Bruce, and they're both billionaires. And... and you know that sort of thing. So it's, you know, it's almost like too even a playing field at that point. It's the bat suit versus Lex's armor.
We haven't talked about Wonder Woman.
Yeah, we haven't.
And Aquaman.
Well, that's what I'm excited for. Like, I want to see how they do it, but it is Zack Snyder, and I don't know if I've got full faith that it's going to come across as awesome as I'm imagining it.
I think we'll see Aquaman at the ending. It will be a cliffhanger ending, and Aquaman will rock up and say, "Dudes, I found something in the sea and we have to punch it."
I want a badass Aquaman, but I don't think he's going to, like, I think, like you said, he's just going to show up. He's not going to really have any sort of agency in this movie or affect the overall story. He's going to be like, at the end, "Hey, party in Atlantis." You know?
That should be the name of the podcast.
Party in Atlantis. There you go. Party in But Wonder Woman does look interesting. Like, the trailer versus, like, the way she's showing up in Batman v Superman compared to her own movie, like, obviously there's going to be, it looks like it's two different characters. In her origin movie, it looks like, you know, it's going to be set in World War One, so it's going to be however many years ago that was.
1914, so 100 years.
Wow, 100 years. So that's going to be 100 years ago, so she'll be a very different character, because by the time Batman v Superman happens, like, it's 100 years later, right? So she would have also aged and probably become sort of cynical slash wise in that time. So it'll be interesting to see what she as a character turns out to be. Because we haven't heard her talk or anything yet.
No, we haven't. I haven't seen anything from her origin movie yet.
Yeah, there was a thing that they released like maybe 2 weeks ago of just her riding around on horses and... It came across like she was still very kind of naive about man's world, right? So our world. So it'll be interesting to see how they sort of weave that in and how she sort of changes over time.
I hope they bring in the regal aspect of Wonder Woman, that she has a certain status in her society. Mm-hmm. And she's strong in body and character. I hope they bring that across and not play it too, bring in too much slapstick. You know, in the first Thor movie, they had a neat balance between the slapstick of discovering our world,
mm-hmm.
with throwing down the coffee mug and trying to ride a hamster or something like that. And that was okay. That was goofy and it was okay. And I don't want the whole movie, I don't want to overshadow the whole movie with discovering the wacky world of man.
Yeah, I think Thor probably did have a nice balance of that. I don't know if Wonder Woman's going to have the same thing, because she would have been around for like 100 years, right?
Yes, she should be acquainted to our ways.
And she would have been hiding out for that 100 years. So she would also, just like Clark and Bruce, be very good at managing dual identities and keeping herself... whatever human persona she's got. So I think her name is Diana. What's her last name?
Diana Prince, I guess.
Diana Prince, that's the one. So yeah, I mean, so she would be having those two personalities. But when she's in costume, I guess, as Wonder Woman, really holding her own against Superman and Batman, like, you know, even as powerful as they are, that she's not taking any shit from them. And technically, though, like, she should have more perspective coming where she is, right? Just in terms of, like you said, she is like royalty. She's been hiding out in the world for 100 years. So she's got like, she's seen what has happened.
She's seen stuff. Two world wars.
While these two guys are duking it out, she's really the one that's like, you know, maybe we need to be looking at the bigger picture here. And so it'll be interesting to see how that happens. And it'll be very disappointing if she just comes across as just like the eye candy in the movie. You know, she needs to bring more weight than that.
Yeah. But it's also, now that you mention it, that she brings weight and everything to it, I hope that they, because in the trailers it seems like Superman still doesn't give a shit about humanity.
Yeah.
And that's a sad thing, because after the events in Man of Steel, it would be neat to see Superman trying to abide for all the things that went wrong in Man of Steel,
mm-hmm.
and Batman still being pissed about those events?
Yeah, I mean, how long is the time? I don't think it's that long between Batman v Superman and Man of Steel, right? Because
a year or something like that? 5 years?
I don't, well, I think maybe a year would work because it's still pretty fresh in everyone's mind. So, you know, I mean, it's effectively that trauma that everybody went through in Metropolis and Superman himself and Bruce was there, right? So it's all pretty much fresh in their minds. And so that's why I think it's still pretty raw and nobody's really thinking straight at that stage. Superman as well, I think he hasn't gotten to the point, again, speculation, right? But he hasn't gotten to the point where he's decided what he's going to do with all his power yet. So he's still like, what do I owe the world? And yeah, I do need to have some sort of penance, perhaps, for everything that happened in Metropolis. But, he, you know, I also did the right thing by taking down Zod because, like, no one else could have. So should I feel guilty for that? Like, and I think that's... If that's the conflict that he's going through, then it'll be quite cool to see, one, how that, because that's the journey he needs to go through. How will that get resolved? How will Bruce precipitate that? Like, how will Bruce help that? How Wonder Woman plays into that as well, right? So eventually, I think you want to get to the Superman where he is the Superman that we all know and love, where he will always do the right thing and, you know, always be on the side of good. But I think what's interesting about the character and why Superman's such a hard character to do, he has to have that journey. And if he doesn't have the journey, then he's just a boring Boy Scout.
Yes.
Yeah. So I do want to see that, you know, it'll be awesome. I don't know if, well, we'll see whether Henry Cavill can pull off that internal struggle. But that's what I want to see out of that.
He should be able to because you have a lot of external devices that'll help sell the transition of the character from this point in his evolution to the final point, so to say, to Superman we all know and love.
Yeah.
You can play this conflict out through all the antagonists and his allies, like you mentioned. Will Batman help him get to that point? That would be neat to see Batman as a mentor for Superman.
Yeah, I do want to see that after the initial conflict. That would be really cool to see because it's not something we've seen before, you know? And I think that's what I want. I want to see stuff that we haven't seen before. I mean, hopefully, you know, that's the exciting part, right? I mean, it's cool to see all the characters and it's obviously cool to see the powers on display and stuff like that. But for me, it's always been around that sort of character journey. So let's hope, you know? So final words, I mean, on Batman v Superman, excited, weary, worried.
I will watch it, but... I have no high expectations.
Okay.
It will be entertaining, that's for sure, but I'm not sure how much it will entertain me.
Right. I think I'm excited. I'm still on excited territory. It could go downhill. I think for me, anticipation is what's driving me. I've got a lot of expectations for where I'd like it to go, as we just discussed, but I think, we'll see if Zack Snyder can actually deliver based on everything that, you know, I've got mentally in my mind. So
if they push back the movie to December and after this episode is released, we know we will get your treatment of the movie.
So we'll see what happens. All right, cool. So what else we got coming up? So the other big one this year is Civil War, right? So
yes.
Expectations for that one?
That movie will be, it will change the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I don't think we will... come out of this movie like we came out of Ant-Man, that it will follow the basic Marvel formula, movie formula. It will follow it to a certain degree, but I think this will be like a mini Avengers movie, Avengers 2.5.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's going to be pretty big. It's going to be a game changer. Did I hear that there was a script leak or something at some point?
I haven't heard anything.
This was like, I don't know, maybe weeks or months ago. I didn't look it up because with the whole spoiler thing, like even now with Batman and Captain America, I'm stopping from watching any of the trailers and stuff that comes out. I don't want to know anymore. Like I want to be surprised when I get there. So I haven't really been looking into it that much. It's going to be some hopefully pretty big events that happen. I'm worried that they've got so many characters that it's going to be a mess.
I don't think we will get much screen time for the external characters like Black Panther. He will show up, he will be acknowledged, and we will learn a bit about Wakanda, I think.
No, well, he's in the trailer. So the last major trailer they released, I mean, he's in there, and he's got somewhat of a prominent role because they have like three shots of him, right? So that's pretty big. So it'll be cool to see how they introduce him. I'm very excited for Black Panther. I mean, that's a character that, again, super interesting, super different from what we've had before. So it'll be cool. I hope they don't just make it a stereotype character. I hope that they make him as the king of Wakanda, as Wakanda as this massive technologically advanced hidden kingdom. I hope they sort of play through on all of that. And it's not just, you know, one of these images we have of a poor African country, you know, because that would be disappointing because we've seen that. I want to see something different.
Yeah, my brother has an interesting theory about Wakanda. It could serve, in his headcanon, it could serve as a nation where Captain America and all the guys that are resisting the civil war reason to fight, it could act as a neutral nation where they can find refuge.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't think of that. It's the Switzerland of the Civil War.
The Switzerland of Civil War.
Interesting. Yeah, no, that'll be cool. It would be a far way to go, though. But I guess that's one place where they could seek refuge. And plus, it's hidden, right? Because, like, what's the thing? It's like nobody really knows where Wakanda is, really.
Yeah, except for the Avengers. And they have the world's biggest vibranium production.
They control the vibranium supply, right?
Yeah,
interesting. And, yeah.
Has vibranium been mentioned in the cinematic universe so far?
Oh, yeah.
In Avengers, in the second Avengers movie.
Yeah, and the shield.
Yeah.
Cap's shield is made out of a vibranium. So, I don't know. Like, as a character, he has to be really cool. So, and I want him to... It'll be interesting to see how he shows up. Like, if he's going to be... You know, going back to the discussion about Wonder Woman, as a king, he needs to be in command, you know, he needs to have confidence and that sort of way about him that demands respect. So it'll be interesting to see how that gets played out when you've got all of these other egos fighting out as well.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I think the cinematics universe, Steve Rogers is a very, you know, he's Captain America through and through. His word is the law. But he also knows when to listen to other people. He's not that stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope this plays into him meeting Black Panther, because I think Black Panther is on his side in the movie.
Right.
I hope I didn't misinterpret or just talking shit. No.
You never know, because I mean he does sort of cover his entire face as a Black Panther, so you don't know who he is, right? And I think Steve Rogers would be like he would have a. He would have a stake in not having secret identities revealed. So
yes, you're right.
We don't really know yet what the Civil War is going to be about doing. Like, we don't know whether it's actually about revealing identities and stuff like that. But there's an element of registration in there. So
I also wonder what the event will be that sets off the chain reaction that leads to the Civil War, because we've seen. There's the scene in the trailer where Tony is holding James Rhodes.
Yeah. So that's an interesting point. I don't think that's going to be the triggering event, because I think the triggering event will be something to do with Bucky causing destruction or something somewhere. And that's when everyone says, you know what, we've had enough. And a lot of it comes out of Sokovia. So in Avengers 2, when Ultron raided that city, right? And so I think the fight with Rhodes where... Rhodes gets the power source ripped out of him. That'll be in the middle of the movie, like at maybe the end of the second act or something. Like, you know, when things are like reaches there. And what's interesting about that is you've got Steve and Bucky and Falcon, right? I guess that group of friends. And then you've got Iron Man and his friend, Rhodey. And so it's like friends versus friends. And it's effectively like when you have a group of people and then like something splits them down. I mean, it's like... exactly what's happening.
Right? Yeah.
But, you know, that's the cool thing about it to me is like how the friendships are going to work. Like what's
a very personal thing.
Yeah. Cause it's, you know, you've got this backdrop of the politics and the law and the morality of the situation. But at the end of the day, when it's friends versus friends, all of that really goes to the wayside because it's so personal, you know, then potentially making irrational decisions because they're fighting from an emotional point of view as well. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out for me.
Yeah, definitely. That will be very interesting. But then Cap and Iron Man have this... I don't see them as friends, but acquaintances in the cinematic universe?
They're like they're work mates.
Yeah.
You know, so like that's that interesting part where in the trailer, Cap says like he's my friend, and then Tony, I used to be once too. I was thinking about that, and they're like, yeah, they weren't ever really like really good friends.
No, they weren't close.
Yeah, because most of the time, like you know, the buds in the movie was Tony and Bruce Banner, right? So they were the science bros, and Falcon and Cap have been gone. So I didn't really see, because even in Avengers 2, there was a lot of argument. Like Steve Rogers and Tony Stark were always on different sides of the argument, even in terms of what to do about Ultron and do about Vision. Like they were always having that sort of adversarial type relationship, which is what made those movies interesting, because they weren't always in the same camp, right?
No, and it's a very real assessment of how would those people treat each other if they existed in real life. They wouldn't be best buddies.
Yeah, especially like it's interesting the way they're written, because they're coming from such different points of view in terms of why are we fighting and what are we fighting for, you know? So it's quite interesting.
Yeah, and that's interesting too, because they are united by conflict and not by interests, so to say.
Not by a vision of what the future should be like. Yeah, it's interesting. That's a good point. They aren't on the same team because they're sharing and working towards the same goal, because their goals are slightly different.
Their goal is basically to get to pave the way, but they're not sure for what. Remove obstacles that show up on the way that other people have laid out for them.
Yeah, it's an interesting one.
With S.H.I.E.L.D. and governments.
Because Tony Stark's always like, I think he's more interested in just sort of the technology and like, you know, putting the bad guys down. Whereas Steve Rogers is very much about the morality of who are the bad guys and what price, what do we need to sacrifice in order to take them down? And he's not willing to cross. And it's interesting then, you know, for Bucky, the line that he's not willing to cross is about just handing his friend back. So that's like the, you know, I hope. So here's the hope. The hope is that the movie actually starts exploring some of that, you know, the deeper values that these guys have and where they're coming from with this fight. Because my fear is that if they don't do that, then it's just going to be just a spectacle of effects, but without any real sort of gravity. Like it's not going to mean anything. It's just going to look nice with lots of explosions.
Yeah. But think of Captain America 2. That movie was a real surprise. It came totally out of left field with all the themes and how they were presented. That scene with the S.H.I.E.L.D. operator refusing to execute the command and being threatened by Hydra. That was a great scene that you wouldn't have got in a super, or you're not used to in a superhero movie.
Well, yeah, it was quite a resonant scene with characters that were really like the third tier characters of the movie, right?
In a way, they were the heroes, and it also showed the influence that Steve Rogers has on others, which he hasn't even met or interacted with. Just the example that he's for other people.
They're just inspiring. And what was cool about that scene too is that lets the audience, you know, you put yourself in that guy's shoes, you know, and they're asking you to execute the command. What do you do? It'd be interesting to see, because, you know, the thing is like it's space. I think in what was the last one called? The Winter Soldier. In The Winter Soldier, they had like what, four or five main characters, which they had to sort of jockey around. Whereas now you've got like, there's so many. Like you said, it's Avengers 2.5. And the risk that you have there is just around, do you have enough time to tell a good story with all these characters? I heard that. Too late.
I'm so sorry.
I can see when you go on mute.
I cannot hide things from you anymore.
Can't hide anything these days. But I mean, look, that's the point, right? Is should we be able to hide? And that's what the Civil War is about. Well, we're about to hit our hour, and we've still got a couple of movies to talk about. Yeah, let's close up Civil War. So what's your final thought?
I'm really looking forward to seeing it, but I'm generally not very excited about the movies because they're killing comic books.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to seeing it. I'm 70% sure that it will be a very entertaining movie, and it will be thought-provoking for a superhero movie.
Cool. I am kind of along the same lines, so I've got faith in the Russo brothers. Hopefully they recreate the success that was Winter Soldier.
I completely forgot that they're also the directors of this movie.
Yeah. And they're going to do the next Avengers movies as well. But let's see if they can do it, right? I mean, let's see if they can balance all these characters and have a compelling story and, you know, have some emotional resonance as well with these characters. Because that's a tough ask. But yeah, I'm excited for it. So let's see how it goes. And yeah, obviously definitely going to see it. I mean, I don't think I'm not going to see any of these movies, except maybe the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I think I'll wait for the DVD there.
All right, so let's just go quickly then through the next couple. So Deadpool, February 12th.
I have no idea what that... I can't grasp this movie. I haven't watched a trailer yet, but my brother is very excited about it. And I see the promotional posters, and I'm not sure if they're actually promotional posters put out by 20th Century Fox or if it's just fan-made posters.
I think that's the genius of this marketing campaign, because you're right. It's so unlike anything else. I actually have no definition for what a good Deadpool movie would be like, and therefore I don't know how to measure this one.
I mean, it would be a better representation that we got in the Wolverine Origins movie.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, look, I hope it's going to be much better than those movies. But in terms of what I'm expecting, like obviously, you know, it's going to surprise me either way. I think I just don't know whether it's going to be, you know, is it going to be a movie that you're going to have to want to watch again? Are the jokes just going to be surface level jokes that after you've seen them, you don't really worry about them again? You don't want to see it again? Or is it going to be a movie that will actually have something that's going to want to bring you back into that world and back to this character? And I think that's really the thing for me. I think Deadpool's a great character. I used to read the comics in like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. I can't remember which one.
In the heydays?
The heydays. Back in the good old days. But yeah, if they can bring that sort of, because, you know, it's a fun character. It's just that I just don't want it to go down the toilet in terms of that real MTV style of humor, you know? That would be disappointing.
Deadpool would make a great support character in an X-Men movie. Or in a Marvel movie, which is impossible at this point in time. But
yeah.
I'm not sure if he can carry his own movie. You know, you have to sit 90 minutes through a Deadpool movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So 90 minutes, you know. Won't get back.
And what's awesome is that it works as a, you know, a 30-second trailer or a two-minute short. I think Deadpool works in those contexts.
Yes.
But you're right. Can he fill out 90 minutes? And have enough range and interest for the audience in that time. You know, that's going to be the interesting part. So I'll try to see it. I'll try to make sure that I get in to watch it while it's in the cinemas, but I don't know what to expect and how it's going to go. So I guess I'm going to be pleasantly or unpleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'm on the same page as you are. I have no idea.
I'm going to be surprised either way. It's just whether it's going to be good or bad. It's going to be the thing. All right. And then X-Men Apocalypse.
I don't have any expectations about the X-Men movies anymore.
Did you like, what was the last one?
Days of Future Past?
Days of Future Past, yeah.
It was okay, but it just feels so futile with Marvel trying to build this big thing that could use the X-Men, but doesn't have the access to it. And then Fox trying to make their own universe.
Yeah. Well, I think for the most part, Fox's universe with the X-Men universe, I mean, it's big enough that it can be self-contained. And Marvel, aside from the fact that we had two Quicksilvers and soon, potentially, two Scarlet Witches, it's kind of working. It'll be awesome if they were all in one place. But then again, imagine how much more messed up the Marvel Cinematic Universe would be with even another set of powered characters. Yeah, they're already building up the Inhumans, and that's sort of coming down the line. What, 2020 or something? I think that is.
If they make it this long, I don't think the Inhumans work. I'm not watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but from what you read on message boards and stuff, it doesn't work out like they anticipated it to.
Really? Okay, I stopped watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think, halfway through the current season. So I haven't, yeah, I think, because when I moved to America, I kind of sort of didn't keep on going with it. It was because the thing is now, like, I've got to watch all my TV when it's kind of playing. And so I've got to make decisions for what I'm watching and what I'm not watching. And unfortunately, Marvel, so Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gotham went to the wayside there. But yeah, so that's the thing. Like, I prefer the X-Men in their own universe where they're only telling X-Men stories. Because, I mean, when I was reading X-Men comics, that's what it was like. I wasn't reading Avengers at the same time. So for me, the X-Men has a very special place in my heart because that's the first comics I was ever reading. And it's large enough that it can be its own super soap opera, you know?
No, you're right. The X-Men would overcomplicate things in the Marvel universe when they are trying to work out the whole registration act or whatever we're going to get in Civil War. And you have the whole racial tension of the X-Men on the side. That would be a bit much.
Yeah. And the universe, I like the X-Men universe that Fox has created. Like, so the Bryan Singer universe, that the dark, the tones of blue, the more scientific aspect to stuff, you know, or the more sciencey aspect to stuff rather than scientific. But, you know, it's a good look and feel. The thing that I'm not sure about with this movie is Apocalypse himself. I don't know if I quite buy into the way the character design is done, but he's a character that's quite dynamic in terms of the way he's going to look on screen and change in size and stuff like that. So it'll be cool to see how they do it, but the Apocalypse in my mind is a lot more menacing and a lot more, like, he just looks too, I don't know, plasticky. He looks like a toy. He looks like they just, you know, modeled him off a toy, whereas I want him to be a lot more menacing and dark. I don't know.
Who's playing him in the movie? I haven't watched any cast news for this.
So I can hear you typing. So
I'm so
you
sorry. I have to know this. It's Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac. So yeah, so he's
okay.
Anyway, he's Poe Dameron, isn't he?
Yes, and that will be very interesting to see him play Apocalypse, because he's a man. He's got a plan. He obviously thinks about the roles he takes on and really infuses them with his talent.
It's a good choice. It's a good choice. It'll be interesting to see how they pull that off. What about the other characters, like in the X-Men lineup? So I'm a bit bummed that Mystique is not blue. Jennifer Lawrence refuses to wear the blue suit, apparently.
Okay. Is Jubilee in it and Psylocke?
Yeah, Jubilee, Psylocke, Jean Grey, Scott Summers.
Oh, Nightcrawler is in it. I'm really excited for Nightcrawler.
Yeah, it's my Australian countryman representing there.
Oh, really? I don't know who's playing it. It's not Alan Cummings?
No, he's a young Australian actor. Cody Smith McPhee or something, I think his name is. Because, like, it's the whole cast has been effectively rebooted. I think Jennifer Lawrence is the only one who's there. Like, obviously with Magneto and Charles Xavier as well. But she's the only... Her and Beast, the guy who's playing Beast, is the same as well.
I don't know what's up with Beast. I mean, it's expensive to shoot scenes with him in the suit, for sure, to maintain the costume and everything. He should be in his Beast form all the time. I think it takes away from the character that he's in human form.
True. I mean, I agree with you, but I think it's still young Beast, right? And I think young Beast is still in terms with his identity, and that's why he sort of uses the holographic projector or the whatever serum he developed to sort of suppress the mutant ability. Because he wants to sort of look normal. Whereas Mystique, on the other hand, her whole point is that we should not apologize for who we are. So that's why I think those two need to be different. Like, in terms of Beast is, you know, still coming to terms with who he is, and Mystique is quite comfortable with who she is. Therefore, she should be blue the majority of the time. Whereas, because older Beast, if you know, the Kelsey Grammer Beast, which I quite like, he was blue all the time. Like, he'd be walking around in his blue...
Yeah, but he wore a suit.
Yeah, you know, that's...
So they... You know, They could cover parts of his body and did not have to build a whole suit for him, a whole fur suit.
Yeah, but young Beast doesn't go around, like, even when he's got the fur on, he's not, like, fully shirtless and stuff. He's not, like, just walking around like a furry ball, fur ball. But, I mean, it's an interesting character, Beast. The Beast in the comics is a lot more interesting than the Beast in the movies, I think.
Yes.
Yeah, but then again, most of the characters are. So the thing that I'm looking forward to with the X-Men, the new X-Men cast is... Can we actually get a good Cyclops you know, for a change. A Cyclopsid doesn't just stand around looking at stuff. And I want to see how the younger versions of these characters do compared to the versions we've seen previously.
And it would be interesting to see James McAvoy, Professor Xavier, grow into the mentor role he probably will assume with this movie from what I've seen in the trailer. You know, he looks like to grow into the Professor Xavier we saw in the first few X-Men movies.
To the character, yeah. I mean, he loses his hair, right? That's the biggest symbolic threshold of becoming the Xavier we all know and love. He's not the the tortured Charles that we've seen earlier
anymore. But that was a neat thing to show how he struggled.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, that journey was cool. So what's cool though is that now his journey is over and he can nurture the younger generation into their journey, you know, or through their journey.
But it's always, I think it's quite a challenge to do in movie form, juggle so many characters who all have different arcs, different powers, different personalities. Then they're interacting with one another at the school. You have to show how the school struggles to maintain its safety.
Yeah. Which is what I think X-Men 2 is still one of my favorite ones, you know, just showing the attack on the school and stuff like that. Days of Future Past was good because it actually showed the X-Men working as a team, you know, in future scenarios, you actually saw them all using their powers together in a way that was like an orchestra. And that's what makes the X-Men cool, is they're not just randomly blasting stuff. They're actually working together. And that was just brilliant. So here we're going to be, I don't know, like we're not going to be seeing that, but we're going to see the start of that. So what I want to see from here is like where Xavier, like how he brings them together as one team, which is interesting because in a lot of the trailers, Mystique is the one leading the younger kids. I don't know how that's going to work. You know, I'm excited for it. I don't know. Could go either way for me.
Yeah, I guess we will get an interesting performance out of Oscar Isaac, I think.
Yeah.
I'll definitely watch it. I also tried to stay away from Days of Future Past, but in the end, I saw it, and I guess it'll be the same here. When I get the chance, I'll look it up.
All right, cool. So I think we're pretty much saying we're going to watch everything so far.
Yeah.
So just for some variety, what about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Out of the Shadows?
I haven't seen the first movie yet, and I gave up on the TV show. I'm only reading the new comics at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
But Rocksteady and Bebop will be in it, and we gonna get Krang, so perhaps it'll be watchable at least. I'm just not very comfortable with Megan Fox and the guy from the comedy guy. I forgot his name. Whatever. The guy from Arrested Development.
Will Arnett.
Arnett, yeah.
Isn't Arrow gonna show up as Casey Jones?
Oh yeah, Arrow is going to show up as Casey Jones.
Stephen Amell.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have no interest in this movie.
No.
I'm not doing anything Turtles related. I haven't watched any of the previous ones. Not reading the comics either.
The comics are good.
Yeah?
Unexpectedly good. Oh, I've read like 30 issues in 2 days.
Wow. Okay, so you binged. So there you go. That's a hot tip. I think that's the first comic related tip we've had.
Yeah, we gave in this show.
All right. So not more to talk about the Turtles then, because neither of us seem to be interested in watching it.
We're very indifferent about the Turtles.
Cool. All right, Suicide Squad, August 5.
You go first.
I've been letting you go first this whole time.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I'm interested. I'm definitely interested and excited over this movie. I think it's going to be so different to everything else that we've seen, and that excites me. I mean, I'm just... Again, a lot of the Marvel movies are starting to be formulaic. You know, Ant-Man was just like, well, is even any point to watch it except just to see the effects and see the powers on display because it all follows the same formula. Whereas this one's going to be, I think, just so left field. It's interesting. The character choices and the casting choices also are interesting. I think I just want to see how that group works together. It has to be an ensemble kind of thing. Like they all have to have really good chemistry for it to really work. So hopefully they can pull that off. And Jared Leto was the Joker.
An interesting choice, at least.
Talking about like your drug junkie. Yeah. That's what he's coming across as. Like he's not so much coming across as the Heath Ledger, just chaos loving psychopath. Yeah, I don't know. Like it's extreme, and in a way that doesn't make the Joker cool, which is also what's cool about it. Like, the Heath Ledger Joker, you could, you know, people wanted to emulate that, you know, in the sense of, you know, it was a great, it was a cool costume you could put on Halloween. But I think the Jared Leto Joker is just so dirty, you know? That's what makes it interesting to me.
The idea is definitely good, but I really don't have much hope for Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Hope in terms of box office or just in terms of being good?
I don't know how to say it. I'm all for the concept of putting, I like the story, but I dig the thing that John Ostrander did in the comics of really going into the characters themselves, making them more than just kooky villains.
Yeah.
And I didn't get that from the trailer. It perhaps from Will Smith, but all the other things, I don't know. I don't want to watch bad people do shit or trying to do the right thing. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I'm interested in the concept of spending 90 minutes with that concept instead of the 15 minutes I spend with a comic book.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, is this a group of people that you want to hang out with? And if none of them really show a sense of humanity, do you really want to spend time with them?
Yes.
Because Deadshot is the one that's got the most depth, I think.
Yes.
All the other ones are kind of surface characters, like, you know, the shark guy. I don't even know his name, but, you know, can they actually make that a character that you would care about in the story, you know? And if you can't, then why would you even watch this?
It would be another thing to play it like the Rogues in The Flash, because they you see the humanity in them. Although they are bad guys and they did some very, very bad things, and you shouldn't like them in any way, but they still retain a bit of their humanity, and I don't see it in Suicide Squad. It looks like a movie for a certain audience, and I don't want to insult anybody, but it looks just so generic, and it's the GTA of movies.
The GTA of movies. The Grand Theft Auto. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's it's something that's interesting on the surface, but yeah, I don't want to spend hours with it.
It's slick and sexy, but not really, doesn't have a lot of substance.
Yes, and I'm tired of Harley Quinn. I can't stand her. I'm so sorry for saying that.
She's an interesting character, but I think we've just had not so much, but there's just so much of hype around Harley Quinn that I don't know. It could go bad really quickly.
Yeah. And it's sad because, oh man, how can I put it without offending people? We need more good female characters in media. I'm all for it. But Harley Quinn is...
Example.
Yeah, Harley Quinn is just overexposed. You liked her in Batman the Animated Series. Now she's here, and now she's here, and now she's here, and now she's more of a psychopath. And now now we address the abuse she has suffered at the Joker's hands. And now we're putting it under the table to get her together with the Joker again. She doesn't seem cohesive to me. Because in the movie, I don't know if the whole Joker issue that was addressed in the comics is addressed in the movies or in the movie.
You mean like her history with the Joker?
Yes. I don't read the comics, but I was told that at some point in the comic, she mentions that she... her relationship with the Joker was an abusive one, and she burned that bridge, so to say. And I'm not sure if they're going for this in the movie to make her independent of the Joker. I guess they'll do because.
Well, did you watch the animated movie, the Suicide Squad animated movie?
No, I haven't watched that.
Yeah, probably, you know, just like you were saying before, is this a set of characters I want to spend some time with? The animated movie is worth watching just because it's effectively a blueprint for what this movie is going to be like, I think.
Oh, okay. Then I'll check it out.
Check it out for sure. I think, yeah, because it does, you know, Harley Quinn is quite interesting in that movie, and the questions around her relationship with the Joker and the stage that their relationship is at is addressed in that animated movie. So definitely worth checking out.
Okay. Then I'll look it up. I think I have the DVD somewhere. I bought it because I bought all the animated movies at some point.
Oh, so yeah, sit down. Spend your 90 minutes and then let us know what you think. All right, yeah. So for me, look, it's going to be a definite watch, but I'm going to hold my judgment until I see it, I think. Because again, it could not so much go either way, but you know, it's an exciting concept. I just don't know whether I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, what I'm looking forward to is Killer Croc, because that's a character you can do a lot with it. Have you read the Batman Earth 2 comic books?
No, I haven't.
Spoiler for Batman Earth 2. In the second volume, he fights Killer Croc. But the fight ends with Killer Croc saying, "Hey, if you want to kill me, please kill me. I want it to be over because I'm already I don't fit into society already." And Batman takes him under his wings, so to say, and he lives together with Alfred and Bruce in the mansion at the end of the volume.
Right.
And that's such a neat way to use the character and to show that he's not only a monster, but he's a human being.
I didn't get that. I didn't know much about that character, but that does make it interesting in terms of what his... If they can surface his perspective and his story in a good way...
Yeah. They don't have to make him a good guy, so to say, but just show us a bit of the consciousness that lives inside that body.
Yeah, I'm all about internal torment. You know, I want to see these characters struggle. That's the humanity that we need to see. So interesting. There you go. So Killer Croc's your hot tip, but you don't really care about Harley Quinn because she just looks over the top. I'm interested to see how Joker turns out and how they play out. You know, the individual story arcs for these characters. So
can they work together?
Yeah, are they even going to bother with that, or are they just going to do it as like, let's just make a cool movie full of explosions, you know? And then Gambit.
Is that even coming out? Is that a reality?
It says October 7 on the list.
Oh. Here.
But I don't know. Channing Tatum as Gambit. I'm not expecting much. Again, it feels like a money grab after the Wolverine stuff. Obviously, because he's not going to be in X-Men Apocalypse, I don't think. Or maybe he's going to have a cameo, but you know, I'm not expecting much.
If they get the guy who played him in the second Wolverine movie, Kitsch, something like that, Taylor Kitsch.
Yeah.
He was a fine choice for Gambit. I don't know why they went with Channing Tatum.
I think Taylor Kitsch just doesn't draw an audience.
Yeah, not after John Carter.
Yeah, he was John Carter, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas Channing Tatum, I think, is you know a bigger name for sure. I just don't know whether he's got draw as well, because Jupiter Ascending was terrible. And what else did he make recently? He's in the Hail Caesar movie now. I think that's just a small role, though, and Magic Mike. But again, you know, Gambit to me is the cool, suave beef. He's got a dark streak. I don't know if I can see Channing Tatum pulling that off.
No.
I think the only thing he's got going for him is the fact that he's from New Orleans. Always from you know that area, but yeah, we'll see what happens.
Perhaps he has a surprise in store for us, because like you said earlier with the Joker, who played the Joker in The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger.
Yeah,
he surprised everybody with his performance.
True, but remember the flack that Heath Ledger was getting over playing the Joker was that he had just done Brokeback Mountain. You know,
that was just after, just before The Dark Knight?
The casting was done because the casting announcement was done just as Brokeback Mountain was out, right? So people were like, that was the last kind of thing he'd done before he got announced as the Joker. And then filming took another year and a half or something, or at least another 2 years maybe, before The Dark Knight was finished. And also, nobody thought that Jack Nicholson's Joker could be topped. Right. So it was a combination of two things, because everyone was like, what, we're going to get the Brokeback Mountain guy as the Joker? No one can beat Jack Nicholson. Like, that was effectively the narrative and the argument, which was the same for Ben Affleck as Bruce Wayne. Right. Because everyone still points to Daredevil, which was like, you know, a decade ago now. It's like, you know, he doesn't, you know, Ben Affleck can't play Bruce Wayne. He doesn't have the depth. Even though Argo had just come out, you know.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to say. Ben Affleck came a long way since Daredevil.
And that's kind of the argument I think I'm trying to put together in this whole thing about Channing Tatum as Gambit, is Heath Ledger and Ben Affleck are both really good actors, you know, in terms of range and being able to sort of mold a character, whereas I don't know if Channing Tatum can do that. I don't know whether he's got the depth of acting ability to be able to pull that off, because he's good at playing the pretty boy.
Yeah, but can he play Gambit?
Yeah, because Gambit, I mean, as well as being is Gambit's not just cool and suave and the character that everyone wants to be. He's got a dimension to him which is dark, and you know, there's a lot of betrayal, and there's a lot of like history to his character in terms of the character, who the character is working for, why the character does what he does, being able to lie convincingly, but also show that it's a lie and that there's a deeper, darker truth underneath all these things. Like, you know, that's what makes Gambit cool. And even the way Taylor Kitsch played Gambit, which was very much just about, oh, I'm just going to play cards and be cool and, like, you know, I can do all this cool stuff with my explosions. It's very surface of what Gambit needs to be, especially in a solo movie. You can't have a solo, because that's effectively being a James Bond type character. And even James Bond these days has, you know, nuances to the character.
Yeah, it's a modern age. People demand that.
Well, you know, it's just more realistic. In the 80s, you could have characters that were like, you know, that were like perfect, you know, do everything well. But these days, people kind of, you know, audiences tend to reject that. They want to see characters that are a little bit more realistic and a little bit darker, showing some sort of struggle, you know.
And Gambit has a lot of struggle.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, I don't know, spoilers for the 90s run of X-Men, but just like, what, you know, the fact that he was working for Mr. Sinister and stuff like that, you know, it was like there was a lot of stuff going on which makes the character interesting, which, you know, I'll be interested to watch the movie. I'll be interested in the first trailer, though. Like, it'll be interesting to see when that trailer comes out, how they're going to set it in terms of tone and how they're going to pitch the character.
Yeah, but if it comes out in October, you said? October 7th?
Yeah.
We should have heard something or seen production photos or something like that.
Yeah, but that's true.
It's only 10 months.
Yeah, I know, right? Or 8 months
eight
now.
Months. It's February already.
So I don't know whether that's still on schedule, but it's on the list here.
Interesting.
So we'll see. And then November 4th, Doctor Strange. Because you're right, like, Gambit should be ahead of Doctor Strange in terms of its marketing machine. And Doctor Strange has already released like Empire magazine covers and stuff. So
yeah, and we got the comic book. So you remember that there is a Doctor Strange out there.
Yeah. Well, he had a pretty big part to play in the what was it, Secret Wars? Doctor Strange was
Secret Wars. Yes. I'm sorry, confused two events.
Yeah. So Secret Wars, Doctor Strange was like the second in command to Doom,
yeah,
right?
He was Sheriff Strange.
Yeah. So, you know, he's a pretty interesting character. The thing that annoys me with Doctor Strange, though, is, like, I think, what was the last Thanos crossover? It was probably from a year or two ago.
Yeah, Infinity.
Yeah, they always manage to just brainwash him or something and just take you know, convince him to do spells that do bad things. Hopefully this movie doesn't sort of go down that path.
I don't understand. I mean, I like Doctor Strange, but he shouldn't play too big of a role in the Marvel universe. He should just stick to his corner, protect the world from all magical threats.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's the realm, that's his niche, right? So he needs to not so much stay there, but, you know, that's effectively his value proposition.
Yeah,
is that he's managing that, so we don't have to worry about it. So I don't think, yeah, he, you know, for the most part, he's kind of like a mystic. He's kind of like the medicine man that lives outside of the village, that takes care of the village. And so I don't see him fully getting involved in all of the Avengers politics and things like that.
But they have to incorporate the magic into the Avengers somehow, I think. You don't cast Benedict Cumberbatch only for one movie.
Well, I think, yeah, because Avengers are slowly, so they're slowly introducing magic into the Marvel universe, right? The Marvel Cinematic Universe. So I think a lot of Scarlet Witch's powers will be magic-based. I don't think they don't have a scientific basis, is what I understand. So it could be that as they go forward, Scarlet Witch and Doctor Strange will have more interactions. Potentially, that's so they'll explain her power set coming out of magic, because everyone else's powers comes out of science, right?
Yeah, for the most part. But they said that in the journey to the quantum realm in Ant-Man somehow ties into Doctor Strange. So perhaps they have this techno-magical approach to well, his craft.
Yeah, they could always go with the fact, you know, the concept that magic is just science that's so advanced we don't understand how it works. So, yeah, so, you know, going that deep into science could give them their way to explain magic. So Doctor Strange is just using a science that's so advanced that it doesn't, we don't understand how it actually works. The same with Scarlet Witch's power set, I guess. But it, again, interesting because it opens up, you know, the multiple realms and the demon realms and gateways to different dimensions and stuff like that. So
yeah, and we also get a Defenders series from Netflix after four shows or after four characters are introduced. And I wonder if they'll go up against Dormammu, was the big bad guy.
Well, Doctor Strange, so this is the thing, right? That's going to be the Netflix universe, which is related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's the same place, but it's the scale that's different. So do you think Doctor Strange would go from the movies into Netflix?
I don't think so. Or will he? I don't know. I'm not sure because...
It'll be cool if the Netflix people start showing up in the movies, in the fight.
They said that Daredevil won't show up in the Avengers movie.
Oh, right. Okay. It's a shame.
Yeah, it would be really great because what's the name of the actor who plays Daredevil?
Is it Charlie Cox or something?
Charlie Cox, yes. Thank you. And he has the chops to also pull off a movie. He acted in several movies.
Yeah, I think so. He was really good. I really liked him as Daredevil. He did a great job. And Jessica Jones was good as well. I think it was very different. It was kind of like that's, you know, genre television at that stage. So it was interesting, and it didn't, you know, it wasn't following the same formula. So I liked going through those.
Yeah, and both Jessica Jones is, you know, it's a testament to what superheroes can do, the power of storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the point, and which is what made Civil War so good as well, is that it's not really about the superheroes themselves, is that you just use the superheroes as a vehicle to tell a good story.
And to do, how should I put it? To talk about a topic that is very uncomfortable. I'm so sorry. It's very hard to talk about the topics that were explored in Jessica Jones, and getting superheroes as a, how should I put it, as a blanket to put all over it.
Yeah, to make us feel comfortable while
with it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, for sure. And you know, that's the power of the characters and the power of the medium. So hopefully, you know, that's what we get as we go forward with these movies as well, that they're not just excuses for the characters to just blow shit up, that we can actually use them as vehicles to you know, explore some subjects.
Modern myths.
They are. I mean, you know, that's the whole super gods thing, right? Is back in the day we had you know, to try to explain the world and explain the way things were happening, we used myths of, you know, Apollo and Zeus and Mercury, and eventually, you know, those gods died away, but now we've got Batman and Superman and Gambit. Do you love how I put him in the same league as Batman and Superman?
And it's so great because, you know, the Gospel of Gambit.
The Gospel of Gambit. Gambit would be a super interesting character to show morality stories. You know,
yes.
The difference between right and wrong, how far should you go to do something? You know, that's what that character is all about. It's not just I can charge up cards and be all cool and suave. So sometimes what is the right thing? You know, what is the right thing? Because sometimes you don't know what's the right thing to do. So that's the interesting part about Gambit. Just speaking about characters that are showing up randomly, we didn't talk about Spider-Man in Civil War.
Yeah, we forgot Spidey.
What do you think of that? You think we are ready for another Spider-Man, or do you think they should have just shelved that?
Oh, we are ready for Spider-Man, but we are ready for Miles Morales and not Peter Parker. I think Peter Parker is a great legacy character, but he's a thing of the past, in my opinion. We need a new Spider-Man. We need a new 15-year-old kid that puts on the suit and goes out there and tries to do the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I think Peter Parker is a great character, but we've had so many Peter Parker movies now. We've watched Uncle Ben die so many times that I'm traumatized by it. I don't know if I can take it one more time. But the thing that makes Spider-Man cool and interesting is that he should be like representative of, you know, I mean, I don't want to say the youth, but he should be representative of today. And the Peter Parker character is from the 60s, right? So he's representative of the 60s, whereas Miles Morales, you know, that character is just so fresh. and would bring a dimension into the Marvel Cinematic Universe that we don't have. We don't have the young voice, because all the Marvel heroes really are kind of really old. You know, they're all in their, like, you know, late 20s or 30s and up. Because, you know, I think Black Widow is one of the youngest characters, isn't she?
I think so. I don't know how old Ant-Man is.
Yeah, but I mean, he's older. He looks like at least 30s. So Black Widow would be like one of the, because she's in her 30s too, right? Yeah. So they're all like, you know, in that sort of mature range. And we talked earlier about Bruce Wayne. So they're still heroes and they're figuring themselves out as heroes. But I want to, you know, the Spider-Man character as a teenager, figuring it out, not even knowing who he is yet, but also trying to do the right thing and trying to do good with all of the complexities of the world as it is now, without the baggage of having to do the storylines for Gwen Stacy and Mary Jane and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's just, that's just too much of baggage, because that's so 60s, you know, that's so like, worrying about going to prom and worrying about, you know, that sort of stuff. It's like Miles Morales, I don't know if he's done that. Like, he's dealing with very different set of issues in his comics.
Yeah, we're getting educated. We're getting educated in other problems than, like you said, going to prom or being bullied by people at school. Miles Morales offers a whole new range of issues, of real life issues that we some people can't experience because of their skin color and social status.
Yeah, and just like, you know, what's cool about his story too, you know, growing up in the shadow of the Peter Parker Spider-Man, is that he can see all these examples of heroes, and he's also trying to work out, how do I be a hero?
Yeah.
You know, looking at these guys, looking at these legends that I have in my media, you know, and so you think about kids growing up now, and they've just inundated with like the internet. They've got access to all this information. They've got all these examples of, you know, good things to do and bad things to do, right? And that's the context that Miles has for his life as well, you know? So yeah, it'll be so cool if we could get that. But, you know, I can understand that nobody really knows who Miles Morales is. And so it's tough to try to launch that character. And also tough, you know, part of the Miles Morales genesis is that he needs Spider-Man as an example. Like, Peter Parker needs to exist in order for Miles Morales to exist. And I think maybe that's, you know, what I'd like to see is that eventually Peter Parker dies.
in Civil War, and Miles, like, Morales takes up.
Which is what happened in the Ultimate Universe, right? So Peter Parker was there for like, what, I don't know, 50 issues or something? Like, he was there for a while. He went through all the storylines and all the Spider-Man stuff that he needed to go through.
And then he died, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, massive spoiler, but Peter Parker died, and that's when Miles Morales kind of picks up the mantle.
Do we need the Peter Parker in the cinematic universe, at least? Because people are already familiar with Captain America, Falcon, and so on. So we could have introduced a completely new Spider-Man as well, because it's not the comic reading audience only anymore. I mean, they are driving a lot of the revenue for the movies, but it would be great for all the non-comic readers to experience a completely new Spider-Man.
Do you read the Miles Morales Spider-Man?
Here and there. I'm not a I'm a bit allergic to everything that has Spider-Man on it at the moment.
So I picked it up like maybe a year or two ago, and I read the first couple of run, like the Bendis issues, I think. A lot of the struggle that Miles has is when he's reflecting on what he's doing and what Peter Parker would have done. So because in the Ultimate Universe, Peter Parker gets revealed as Spider-Man. So everybody knows that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. And then when he dies, like, there's a massive funeral and stuff like that. And Miles Morales, when he starts picking up the role of Spider-Man, like, he tries to emulate Peter Parker. And a lot of the things that he does is he's thinking about, what would Peter do? And I think if you have a brand new character as Miles Morales, could you still do that? You know, could you still have, does he need Peter Parker in order to exist? Or will the character of Miles Morales itself be very different if Peter Parker wasn't there? And so that's why I think you would have Peter Parker first and then have him
Miles
die.
Morales, yeah. Yeah, that's a point. It's a point for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, I'm just sort of trying to put that together in my head as I was talking. So it's a little bit all over the place, maybe. But yeah, because Mary Jane and Aunt May actually are in the Miles Morales Spider-Man comics.
Oh, they are.
And they give him advice. And he, you know, they're friends. They know who he is and he knows who they are. And like they feature in as a part of his inner voice. And Peter Parker features in as a part of his inner voice as well. So I think those characters are so intricately kind of tied to each other that it's hard, I think, to just launch Miles Morales by himself. So I mean, that would be the only thing that I would do. Sorry, not the only thing I would do, but that would be the way that I would see being able to bring Miles Morales in. So have Peter Parker for about
to actually bring Peter Parker in as a mentor character for the next Spider-Man, for the next iteration, so to say. Bring the character, you know, an evolution of the character, but how should I put it? An evolution of the mantle and not the character.
Yeah, so that's the thing. I think that needs to be the roadmap that Sony and Marvel build on,
yeah.
Is that Peter Parker needs to be introduced. Peter Parker needs to lead and leave behind a legacy of just being the super awesome character that, you know, New York City loves and would inspire kids like Miles Morales.
Yeah, to do the right thing. Or to be a hero.
When he does die, that gives Miles Morales, you know, that would then be able to introduce Miles Morales into the fold.
Yeah, I haven't thought about it that way, to go the Batman route, so to say, to build a spider family, so to say.
Yeah. I would recommend that you read the first, so the Brian Michael Bendis run on the Miles Morales Spider-Man. It's worth reading.
Yeah, I got the run. I have it. It's on Marvel Unlimited, so I can read it. But I started reading the new series, Spider-Man. It's only Spider-Man. The Amazing Spider-Man is Peter Parker now, and Spider-Man are the Miles Morales things. And I wasn't blown away by the first issue. I thought it was a bit too Bendis-y, or Bendis trying to... I don't know. It felt stale.
It felt too Bendis-y, really? Okay, I haven't read that one, but I've got to check it out then. I got to see what this definition of too Bendis-y is.
No, it's good, but I don't know. I don't know. I think I'm just at the moment I'm tired of Spider-Man. I'm just like Harlequin.
You just had enough.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get through what you're reading now, and then by the time the movies come out anyway, we'll see how you feel. So, so dude, we're almost at 2 hours. So
should we do a short comic book thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll brief. Over.
You can start that one.
Tom King's Vision. Read it. It's amazing. It's the Vision builds a family for himself and tries to emulate being a human being through this family, and also educate the family in being human. And the big crux in the whole thing is that the family already is more human than the Vision is.
Is that a spoiler?
No. I'm not spoiling anything. There are a lot of surprises. We're only 4 issues in now, but it's definitely more. It's a really great series, and I really hope that Tom King is the new writer of Batman once the whole rebirth thing starts.
Yeah,
because the man's great. Sheriff of Babylon is also a great comic book.
So that's a monthly?
That's a monthly, yeah. But read it in trades. I decided to wait for the trades after I've read the first issue, because I think it's better consumed in longer story chunks.
Ah, right. Okay, cool.
What's also great is Shutter, which had issue 18 come out this week. I call it Saga for the Rich.
Saga for the Rich. Okay.
If you got the $4 left. To also read it, because it's not that, how should I put it, obviously offensive as Saga tries to be sometimes. They're trying to offend. I feel that Saga tries to offend people that are not reading the comic book. But
right.
Saga is great, but I think Shutter is a bit better. I like it. I like it a bit more.
That's a great concept. You know, if a comic can offend people who are not reading the comic, so they read it, and then they're not offended anymore.
Yeah,
is that the point?
Yeah, I thought that Saga was setting out to do that thing, but you know, I'm already a very liberal person. I'm okay with everything that Saga is doing.
Yeah.
But sometimes I feel like it's this thing you can shove into other people's faces.
Right.
And I'm not sure if I'm okay with that, or with, with using it as a vehicle for doing that.
Yeah, you don't want it to be, you don't want it to politicize anything, right?
Yeah, yeah. Comics should be fun. Comics should be educational. Yeah, but on the other hand, you know, we need to, especially in these days, we need to offend people to get them to think about things, I guess.
Well, yeah.
There's no other way.
You know, it's not so much about offensiveness, but it's about challenging, right?
Challenge people. Yeah, that's a much better word. Challenge their worldview.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, that's the point of our podcast here is
challenge people.
Presenting our different perspectives on all this stuff. So,
and what I'm really surprised by is the Gem and the Holograms comic.
Yeah, really?
Yes.
I saw this on Comixology and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to go down that one. It feels very Richie Rich and kind of Archie to me, but is it?
Yeah, it is to a certain degree, but it has this unique charm to it that I'm somehow, I can't resist it. I say it as it is. I buy every issue. I bought the trade. I bought the cover collection boxes that came out for the first two issues. I like the art very much by it's Sophie Campbell now.
Right.
I don't know. It has, as I said, it has this unique charm, and there's a moment in the latest issue where the singer of the Misfits, Pisas, I think her name is. Her cat's named McMartigan, and her band names are wondering where she got that name from. And she whispers something like, watch classic movies, you savages.
Right.
It's moment like this that make me enjoy the book so much, right? Because it's presented in it's not this over, it's not trying to grab you by the nostalgia collar, so to say, and spin you around, but it just feels natural. It feels that those people like the things they like because they are built this way, so to say, and not because Tumblr tells them to like them.
Okay.
I'm so sorry I mentioned the website, but it's...
No. They are their own characters.
Yeah,
they
feel natural.
Copy what's cool and what's just, you know, what's trendy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And
yeah. So their personality
the book
come across as authentic, right?
Yeah. I really dig the book, and those are my three main titles at the moment. I just got the latest Master Keaton book in. That's an older manga about a former SAS agent who's working as a insurance. He checks insurance cases for their validity.
Yeah,
and that's very neat as well, because it when you hear the concept, you think of a very dry procedural thing, but it's not. It's a comic about the human condition to a certain degree. It can be funny. It can be sad. There's a lot of action. Then there's no action at all. You have vignettes that are only talking heads.
Right. Okay.
It's really good, and it's the fifth volume now. And I thought after the second volume, well, what will they show me now? How will they? You can't pull off the same trick 10 times and excite people with it. But at the end of book four, I was sad that book five, I finished it in October, I think, and I was sad that book five wasn't arriving until February next year.
All right. See, you got to wait. You got a season break now.
Yeah. But perhaps that's a good thing. If you read them if you binge on it, perhaps it's not that good anymore.
Right.
But yeah, those are my main things at the moment. I read a ton more, but... I have to say that digital comics or the digital distribution made me even more aware of a certain quality I'm looking in comic books these days.
Is that in terms of quality of production or quality of story?
A quality of story. I dropped a lot of DC and Marvel titles when I went to digital.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well for me is that, you know, I was reading comics. Like Marvel back in the 90s and 2000s, in the early 2000s, but it just seems to be going around in circles. Like I'm not, it's like, how many more times do we have to do this? You know? So I'm more interested now in character type stories. You know, I want to see those cool arcs. And I don't want interesting, compelling characters rather than just, you know, new displays of power and explosions.
Yes.
So I'm I was, you know, I'm enjoying Saga. I just was looking at The Wicked and The Divine. My friend got that one, so I might borrow that one off him just to check it out and see what that's like. I liked the Young Avengers run that Kieran Gillian did.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if he said really.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's not bad, but I don't know. I didn't like it. But mainly because of Marvel Boy.
Yeah.
That was the deal breaker for me.
I was a Young Avengers fan from because I think I've read all of the Young Avengers little mini title things that they've had. And this was fun. It started off really good, and I really liked the way they did the characters, especially young Loki. But the ending, kind of stumbled on the dismount, I think. But overall, it was enjoyable. Like, the art was really good.
Yeah, Jerry McElvey is great.
Yeah, so I thought that was
static, but great.
It's static, but innovative and dynamic at the same time. Like, it feels, I don't know, really, it's beautiful to look at, you know, especially the double page spreads and stuff. It's just, the panel work is amazing, I thought. So I don't know if, you know, The Wicked and The Divine look and feel, it feels like more of the same. So I just want to see what the story and the characters are like so I can get into that. And I like what they do with music. That team. So there's a lot of music references and stuff.
Perhaps that's the my Achilles heel with Kieran Gillen's work, because I'm not that versatile when it comes to music as him, and perhaps I don't get a lot of the references.
Right, yeah. Well, I listen to pretty much everything. So
then you're perfect for him.
Yeah, so maybe that, it gels better with me. So cool. So aside from that, I don't think, you know, I started reading novels again. So,
oh,
yeah, but that's, you know, probably won't have time to get into that now. But I do want to sort of keep on going with my comics and stuff. There was a great War and Peace movie that's currently playing on History Channel, I think. And it's making me want to read War and Peace. So we'll see. We'll see if I end up doing that.
That's a thick book from what I've heard.
One massive book. Yeah, that's a binge read. Itself, I think. So we'll see anyway. But aside from that, so what else did we have on our list to talk about?
Wait, let me check it. We almost did everything.
So we're planning on doing a 1 hour show, but we've been
at the 2 hour mark.
Well, worked out well, I think.
Yeah.
Doing well. So maybe we should do a wrap up, right? What did we talk about today, Martin?
So we checked out our opinions and our hopes and fears for the upcoming superhero movie slate for 2016. We talked about Star Wars Episode 7.
We also talked about tax.
Yeah.
And shipping things into America and Austria. Such as randomly. So maybe we'll just end it there. And we will try to be a lot faster and more professional
the next time, but you know, baby steps.
Yeah, we're doing this for fun, but if there are any comments, I'm sure Martin will come up with some sort of way to let us know how to.
I will add a bit with all the contact information. If somebody liked it or disliked it, please let us know. Please don't be too angry about it,
unless it's like a massive obvious thing that we should have known as geeks and really didn't.
Yeah. But I'm always open to be corrected, because nobody can know anything. Nobody can know everything.
Yeah. Anyway, it's all about having fun. So
yeah,
that's why we're here. So hope you guys enjoyed, whoever's listening. I'm Niv from Chicago.
I'm Martin from Vienna.
And we're signing off. Till next time.
Goodbye.
Martin from the Future here again. You can reach us via email at asteroidsinexile@gmail.com. We have a blog online at asteroidsinexile.wordpress.com. We're working on getting an account on all the social media outlets that are out there. And our intro music comes courtesy of the band Safe States, which you can find in the show notes, or you just search for them on Bandcamp. Thanks for your time.